Unexplainable is a science show about everything we don't know. Like, we don't know how bikes work.
Get out. Come on.
We don't know where the moon came from.
Holy cow.
You've touched the moon.
This is incredible.
We don't even know what life is.
No one has been able to define life, and some people will tell you it's not possible to.
Unexplainable takes you right up to the edge of what we know and keeps going. New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
What? Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
What is that?
Wow.
Oh my God.
Radiolab.
Whoa.
Adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Hello, and welcome to Raising Health, where we explore the real challenges and enormous opportunities facing entrepreneurs who are building the future of health. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Chris. Today's episode is a companion piece to the most recent edition in our go-to-market playbook series, entitled Commercializing AI in Healthcare, the Enterprise Buyer Perspective.
As part of this series, we did interviews with key executives on both the payer and the provider side of healthcare, asking them in-depth questions about what they're seeing and how they're thinking about AI. As any healthcare founder knows, it can be difficult to get into a room with system execs, so we're bringing the execs to you.
For this episode, we pulled out some key themes that we heard from our interviewees. These themes and others are covered in depth in the playbook itself, which we'll link in the show notes.
First, we'll hear about the jobs to be done with AI. When we asked about which jobs are a priority, every one of the executives brought up clinician support and workforce enablement. The first voice you'll hear is that of Ashish Atreja, Chief Information and Digital Health Officer at UC Davis Health, who talked about workforce shortages and how AI might be able to help.
But the biggest challenge we as health system face is we do not have enough clinicians. And there are not enough clinicians in the United States or globally to meet the current level of demand, leave alone the demand that is coming right now with aging generation and with the modern day customer, which wants always on healthcare. So we are already having physician burnout, clinician burnout. So there's studies, 60-70% of nurses within 2 years of joining feel they have to leave that profession because of burnout, right? At any stage, 30-50% of physicians are feeling burned out. It's a problem that has no answer. More and more demand for care and less access available because people are getting burned out and we cannot just increase the supply. And that's where I believe a fundamentally different way of providing care answers, care delivery, is where AI steps in. And the example I cite is the biggest gaps in healthcare we see are because, not because there are not enough medications or treatment options available, but because the delivery is inefficient. And I'll give an example. Today, there are blood pressure medications that can control blood pressure within 8 to 12 weeks for 95% of patients. But in reality, less than 1/3 of our population in US has controlled blood pressure. So the gap is not efficacy of these medicine. The gap is delivery of the care because our care delivery process is so inefficient, is so much bound by space and time that you have to see the physician or a clinician in the same place, and there are not many of us around.
One of the concerns we've heard on this podcast before is that cash-strapped hospitals might see the opportunity to leverage AI to cut their provider workforce. Paul Uhrig, Chief Legal and Digital Health Officer at Bassett Healthcare Network, was careful to note that that's not how he's thinking about it. Rather, the goal is to enable physicians to act more like physicians, caring for patients instead of doing data entry.
The lens is, how do we make our workforce more efficient? And that's not code for reduction in workforce. That's a code to be able to make them, allow them to perform to, you know, their highest tasks, relieve them of mundane tasks, to free them up to do additional work or to redeploy them. That's the primary focus. And so we've looked at both administrative capabilities. So where are there applications that can eliminate the redundant tasks, whether it's around a call center, whether it's around revenue cycle management, or other administrative functions. On the clinical side, you know, I think certainly we are not necessarily going to go to any application that is making clinical decisions, if you will, but we're certainly looking at technologies that are going to, you know, help our physicians and our nurses be more efficient. So what are a couple of examples of those, right? There's great technology out there, that ambient technology that can listen into the interactions between a provider and a patient, contextualize that discussion, and basically generate the notes that will go into the EHR. So a wonderful technology that has a lot of return in terms of the accuracy of the notes. It also allows the physician to very much focus on the patient during the visit rather than, you know, do what so many complain about, right, which is spend time on the computer typing notes instead of paying attention to the patient. So, you know, these types of applications that will augment the physician, augment the nurse, right, provide them with more tools. At the end, it's still going to be their judgment. They're going to have to review the work product that's generated by these applications. But tools that will help augment our physicians and nurses, we're definitely taking a very hard look at.
Sarah Vaizi, EVP and Chief Strategy and Digital Officer at Providence, provided us with a useful framework to break down the jobs to be done in AI. Four domains across clinical and administrative categories.
So we split this all up into four big domains: clinical use cases, patient and consumer use cases, sort of back office types of things like revenue cycle and supply chain, and then lastly, more like workforce, administrative, knowledge worker type use cases. We're really leaning in heavily on the first two around, I would say actually kind of the intersection of maybe the first two around patient and consumer slash clinical. And in particular, leaning in on anything that reduces burden and sort of takes that stuff out of the middle of what we call the sacred encounter. So the sacred encounter is when the provider and the patient really are doing that sort of caregiver, care receiving kind of experience, whether that's the modality is somewhat irrelevant, but we are trying to enable that. And removing burden from that experience. So one of the key areas where we've driven focus, and I think focus is a really important point here because it's really hard to separate signal from noise, and it's easier to do that within the context of a given use case, is around in-basket management for providers. For folks who may not know what the in-basket is, it's essentially, think about it like the email inbox for a provider, right? And there are a lot of companies out there tackling it, but it's really hard to tackle it without really getting deep into the reasons for why patients and consumers are generating those messages, and then how patients are getting those questions answered, and through what mechanisms providers are answering them. And so the traditional way has been to just let the patient generate all the messages that we want, and we'll tackle it on the back end. But we think there's a lot of potential to actually get further upstream and tackle that problem in a much more sort of systematic way without requiring our clinicians to have to manage it all.
So what does this mean for founders? Jay Rugani, A16Z Bio and Health Investment Partner, gave us his take.
I think the category of enablement, just helping human workers do more with the time and resources that they have, is an endless design space. And what's exciting for a lot of the AI products is we're being dazzled with capabilities on the level of automation that can be abstracted and taken away from our daily work. And so if I were a founder thinking about building products for clinicians today based on many of the needs we heard from enterprises, the opportunities are basically endless.
Another question that we asked these executives, a really important question for founders to think about, was how they're measuring ROI. In this next section, we'll hear from a few people about how they set KPIs for AI vendors and what constitutes a real return on investment. First up is Jerry Koester, Chief Information Officer and Digital Officer at Marshfield Clinic Health System.
Everything in IT starts with what is the business problem that we're trying to solve. And each business case, which involves either the purchase or development of any AI solution, has to be supported by an ROI statement. And some ROI is easier to measure than others. And of course, hard ROI is more desirable because it has a notable impact on expenses or revenue. And these can revolve around very typical ROI measurements that we're using in healthcare, such as cost savings. You know, can it reduce operational costs through labor or error rates? Does it increase efficiency and productivity, such as streamlining workflows or optimizing workflows or automating workflows? Does it generate revenue through customer acquisition or conversion rates of our patients? Does it improve quality metrics such as our fall rates? Does it increase customer engagement, which is a hot topic as well in healthcare, and experience such as retention rates and net promoter score? Does it reduce risks, time to insight, competitive advantage? And one very important metric that is harder to measure but is very important in our organization is employee satisfaction and engagement. And, you know, we talked about the ambient scribe technology. We know that the providers are able to complete the documentation faster, and it adds those two more visits per day. And this generates revenue and helps us improve our clinical outcomes. But the less tangible benefit is the ability to reduce the frustration that our providers have trying to keep up with the documentation in the EHR. Other things like auto-diagnoses of radiology images can increase the turnaround time of reads and improve accuracy through the, we can measure pre-accuracy prior to the technology and post-accuracy, but the turnaround time is immeasurable to our patients. And those are the things that are we need to be thinking about as well. So in any discussion around ROI, one thing to keep in mind is that aligning the KPIs to our organization's strategic goals and objectives, this makes it easier to regularly assess the solution's performance and the long-term benefits. And those are the ones that are going to have a higher weight to us when they're related to our strategic plan.
Daniel Barchi, Chief Information Officer at Common Spirit Health, gave us an example for how they think about KPIs for AI solutions in OR scheduling and stroke response.
It really is case by case in the KPIs that we use. So for the OR scheduling, it's how we're using the block time. Are we using it appropriately? For the stroke response, how quickly we respond? What's the door to groin time for intervention for the appropriate patients? How do we reduce a patient's length of stay by treating them more quickly and more appropriately? But it's the core goals that we're always looking for in any of the things that we purchase, whether they're services or tools or software. How does it improve safety? How does it improve the quality patient outcomes? How does it improve the patient experience? And then really, how does it improve the joyful practice of medicine for our physicians and nurses? And we don't talk about that enough. We do talk about the drudgery that they have to go through to document, make sure we're billing and coding appropriately. But we never talk enough about the joyful practice of medicine and the ways that technology can help improve that.
During an interview with Himanshu Arora, Chief Data and Analytics Officer at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, A16Z BioInHealth General Partner Julie Yu took the conversation in a slightly different direction, not only about KPIs, but also how those KPIs influence whether an enterprise chooses to buy or build an AI solution itself. Here's that question and response.
Are you looking at this from a pure, how do we partner with other third-party companies that are AI experts that are developing their own products that we could leverage? Or do you also contemplate any build internally where you might be yourself partnering with one of the big AI, you know, foundational model providers, or yourself staffing AI engineer teams to develop your own solutions in-house?
Yeah, good question. I think there's some parallels here, Julie, between how we look at AI today and how we as an industry, I'm generalizing it a little bit, looked at analytics, let's say a decade ago, right? So the short answer is, it is a spectrum and there's various plays along that spectrum, right? So today, if we look at where the focus is, it is early enough that we are looking at external capabilities again, startups in this place, people with really, or companies with really specialized point solutions. There the consideration is, okay, what is the lift that we are going to get from the solution? And then what is the cost of, and when I say cost, it's financial plus non-financial, of integrating these point solutions into the broader ecosystem. The other side of it is, and I don't know today that we will necessarily evolve to that extent as we did in the traditional analytics space, which is, well, what foundational tools can we take and build our own internal net new standalone AI capabilities? my sense today is it might be more focused on integration of a spectrum of capabilities, because in some ways, maybe a crude analogy, but it's like it's the equivalent of coupling a electric motor onto a slightly older chassis. And driven simply by the sheer scale of the industry, there's a whole variety of technology solutions, platforms that are both enablers for the business today, but also create constraints for where and how quickly we can enable these capabilities. So I think that it's almost what's a composite that needs to get created there, I expect, will primarily be a function that sits internal to the organization. But what are those external capabilities that need to be brought in, whether it's, again, through a startup or through a incumbent? You know, you name some of them, the Microsoft, Googles, AWSs of the world. It will vary by solution. I, again, just projecting ahead to what's required and needed in this space.
Finally, and importantly for founders, we asked the executives about what makes a good partnership and how that evaluation might be different with AI companies versus non-AI companies.
What other advice would you give to founders specifically with regards to how you might evaluate AI solutions differently than just, you know, regular software solutions? Do you have specific criteria you only apply to AI solutions differently than other technology solutions that you evaluate?
Again, I'll caveat this by saying we're still very early in the journey, right, of AI solutions as a whole and evaluating them. I think the thing that I would say we apply, and maybe differently is not even the right word, we apply in a more pronounced way, is what we talked about, is in terms of data use, data privacy, data security, and adverse use. Whether it's intentional, most often than not, it's unintentional. Right? We've all seen the stories of things gone south with people using ChatGPT and other such large language model solutions. Large part of it, you have to assume, wasn't an intended outcome. And so I think that's the boundary conditions, and how do you know that a user is now starting to go out of bounds in this space and developing early detection systems for it? I think that's one area where, based on conversations that I had with new entities and founders in this space, there's room for more focus on, right? Which is the happy path we all get. How do we understand, or in most cases we get for the newer emerging solutions, the happy path that is. But what are the early warning systems built in place for saying, hey, this is timeout. Like this, we have to reevaluate, rebuild, you know, redeploy, relearn, whatever the case might be. I think second is, just given the excitement and just the headroom for the opportunity to grow, again, more specific to generative, there's sometimes, and I fall into this trap too, getting enamored with the solution itself and not necessarily going for understanding or activating the business value from it. And for healthcare, for us in particular, somehow, some way, shape, or form, it all circles back to an individual member, whether it's directly one or two degrees of separation away.
Rob Bart, Chief Medical Information Officer at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, noted that startups should aim to understand the solutions that a health system already uses and try to slot into the existing workflow. That eases the adoption process for the system and, perhaps more importantly, for the individual providers.
Most healthcare systems have an incumbent ecosystem of solutions they're currently using, whether it's their PAC system, they might be a partner with Microsoft for their general ERP, and others, they might be a partner with one of the major EHR vendors. I think if you're a healthcare startup, understanding the typical ecosystem that a healthcare delivery organization uses, and then understanding how you can tap into using that or leveraging that as part of your base platform as your introduction into the environment. That eases the amount of work and effort that goes into having to bring in a new vendor. But the other thing that it does is, if most of a clinician's workflow is within the electronic health record, or most of it's within the PAC system, you want your intelligence to be embedded within that workflow. Yeah. You don't want it to be some other widget or gadget that they have to go someplace else to use and then bring that information back into the EHR or the PAC system. And so I think that's a key component, in sort of being in the healthcare startup space is figuring out not just what you're solving, but how does what you're solving, how can it be used in a seamless manner within the workflows that already exist?
Lisa Davis, EVP and Chief Information Officer at Blue Shield of California, talked about what goes into forming a good strategic partnership between her organization and a vendor.
Well, we actually go through a very thoughtful process when we are considering a strategic partnership. And when I talk about strategic partnerships, one, making sure that our guiding principles and values of what we're trying to accomplish are aligned. What are they trying to do? What are we trying to do? Is there commonality in terms of what those are and how we're going to get there? That's probably number one. Number two is, I like to say, put skin in the game. Show me from a strategic partnership standpoint that you're going to put skin in the game. You are going to be committed to our success. And you should expect the same from us, to put skin in the game and be committed to our success. And I can give many examples of partners where that is the case. And when we do that and both of us have the same goals, we get really fantastic outcomes. I'm lucky that we have some great partnerships at Blue Shield of California that is helping us to achieve our goals.
Finally, we heard from Selma Ferhat-Bogovic-Fidi, SVP and Chief Information Officer at Point 32 Health, about how, once trust is established, she considers the relationship with vendors to be a true partnership.
A few instances, I would say, very specifically, offering us advice in the areas and pushing us to maybe think outside of the box or call out, you know, areas of our data integration and data management. So a lot of, you know, thoughtfulness about bringing us new approaches and options that could be taken advantage of that maybe otherwise we wouldn't have thought about. And I think it highlights back to my comments earlier around they brought ability to execute something as a pilot, as a POC, test it out. They demonstrated knowledge about our business, about our value that we can add to the system, and you know, partnered with us on that execution and delivery of it.
To that end, Jay from A16Z Bio and Health expanded on what that might mean for founders.
The dream for any startup is to go from being one of many vendors to a strategic partner, to a trusted advisor. And on some level, that transition exists on a spectrum. It's not binary, you are or you aren't. You're sort of closer to becoming trusted as you've developed that relationship over time. The goal is actually to walking a mile in your customer's shoes and understanding what is going to be a win for them and helping them to define the metrics. It will come down to the simple criteria. You're either making them more money, you're either reducing cost, or you're saving time. And most ROI metrics boil up into one of those three categories. But the more time you spend understanding what actually matters for your buyer, and when I say buyer, it's not the overall enterprise, it's the specific individual or individuals with whom you're working and who are accountable internally in the organization for a successful partnership with you. The more you can understand which submetric actually matters for their day-to-day and for their livelihood, the more likely you're going to anchor your team to a metric or a set of KPIs that actually move the needle for your customer.
More insights from all of these executives can be found in our most recent go-to-market playbook, Commercializing AI in Healthcare, the Enterprise Buyer Perspective, which we'll link in the show notes. You can see all of our go-to-market playbooks at a16z.com/digital-health-builders.
Thank you for listening to Raising Health. Raising Health is hosted and produced by me, Chris Tatiosian,
and me, Olivia Webb,
with the help of the Bio and Health team at A16Z. The show is edited by Phil Hegseth.
If you want to suggest topics for future shows, you can reach us at raisinghealth@a16z.com. Finally, please rate and subscribe to our show. The content here is for informational purposes only, should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security, and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any A16Z fund. Please note that A16Z and its affiliates may maintain investments in the companies discussed in this podcast. For more details, including a link to our investments, please see a16z.com/disclosures.